Hello, good evening.
Welcome to episode 5 of Owl and Foal's Norwich City Football Club We Meet Again series. So this is the podcast where we look back at the history between Norwich City and our next opponents. How are you, Foul? Yeah, straight into the pleasantries.
Yeah, good. How are you doing?
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm happy to be back in Halston recording these face to face.
Back in the studio.
We're in the studio, aren't we?
It's great to be face to face again as COVID's gone now, has it? On the retreat.
We're certainly acceptable that we can do this face to face, isn't it? No restrictions.
Double jabbed up here, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. What have you been up to? You've been to Ireland, I believe.
I have been to Ireland.
Where Sir Houlihan's bachelor party, was it?
I tried to do the Gary Doherty tour of Ireland. No, I went to Ireland, and what a fantastic place it is as well. We were in Cavan, a bit of time in Dublin.
Yeah.
And wonderful weather, actually, which apparently is something...
That's a rarity, yeah. You don't normally go to Ireland for the weather, do you?
No, but went to Marish wedding. It was great fun.
Any booze involved?
Yeah. Fair play to the Irish. They know how to drink. But they're the most wonderful hosts.
Yeah.
Beautiful food, beautiful country.
You didn't meet any ex-Norwich Irish connections over there?
No.
No.
We're in County Cavan. It was a small place. So
yeah.
I didn't see too many ex-Irish Norwich players.
No.
But I did talk about, so one of the lads there about Wes Houlihan, so I actually did mention the podcast.
Okay.
Talked about the fact I'm a Norwich fan. He was like, you know Wes Houlihan. I was like, of course I know Wes Houlihan. And I was like saying that he's talked about being the Irish Messi, but in fact he's not. Messi's actually the Argentine Houlihan.
That's it. Yeah. What a player. And he's still doing the business at Cambridge, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not seeing too much about this season, but he's... he was one of those players where pace was never really an issue, was it?
Mm.
He was just so clever on the ball. And I think he moved on from Norwich at the right time, but I just loved watching him play.
So yeah.
Maybe he didn't quite nick as many goals as maybe his ability maybe suggested he should have done, but I'm a huge Houlihan fan. Always will be. All-time great for us.
Excellent. Well... This episode is one that you don't know who's coming up today, do you?
We're just talking about this. The first one so far this season, it's gone beyond my knowledge of the fixture list.
Well, you could get a ferry from this place over to Ireland. So there's the link. It's the blue side of Merseyside. It's Liverpool's oldest professional club.
Yep.
They once played at Anfield. Of course, it's Everton, one of the founding members of the Football League. And you know I always like my history, don't I? Now, it's a bit strange because we talked about Arsenal last time round and how they'd never experienced relegation. And Everton have actually only been relegated on 4 occasions from the top flight. But you also have to factor in that as a founding member, they started out in Division 1 back in 1888.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got a lot more years in the top flight than Arsenal.
Yeah.
Last time they were in Division 2 was back in 1953-54. And I think I counted, we've had about 8 relegations since then. It's a weird one, isn't it? We sort of touched on this with Arsenal, how they've managed to do that.
Particularly with Everton, because in the last, well, really since the mid-90s, they've not done too much, have they?
No, exactly. It's not like, you know, Arsenal have had this, you know, certainly in recent times, they had this period under Wenger, weren't they, where they were never likely to go down, but Everton have certainly had moments where, and certainly there's been a few occasions, we'll touch on one in particular later on, but where they have been in a relegation scrap and they have struggled.
Well, yeah, they weren't a million miles away one season under David Moyes, something like that, but I think Moyes got them into Europe the following season. So, but yeah, that's true. And if I'm honest with you, Everton have been a little bit of a punchback for me in recent years because they've always been the team I've compared Norwich to when I say that would you swap the last 10 years of Norwich City with being an Everton fan that period?
Yeah.
Where they've done pretty much nothing. And I am being disrespectful to Everton, and I'm sorry about that, because they're a great club and a club I've got no axe to grind with.
And they've got they've certainly got a very colourful history in terms of trophies. So, yeah, they've won a lot of Division 1 trophies in their time,
yeah,
or championships in their time. So they are a club steeped in tradition and history and have got a very impressive honours list.
I agree with what you're saying. And to be fair, I suppose, if you go back to Norwich City before 2009, whenever it was, we pretty much spent, with that old, apart from that one season, we spent sort of like 15 years probably not really doing much as well.
Yeah, actually, come to think of it, I did quite enjoy just being a mid-table Division 1 club.
As a championship then. Or?
No, when we had that spell where we were in the top flight for eight or nine seasons in a row.
Yeah. Yeah, that would take that now, wouldn't we?
But what do you think of Everton? They call them the People's Club, and Goodison's just one of those proper passionate grounds, isn't it?
You
like those, don't you? You've mentioned before.
Oh, it's ticks my classic ground.
It does, though. Yeah. You've not been there, I presume.
No, actually, but I've not, no. But yeah, in the same way that Anfield ticks my boxes, it's like, it's in the middle of the people, isn't it? Literally, it's in the middle of how things they eat. It's steeped in tradition. It's not got any of the fancy frills and the lack of soul, which the new stadiums tend to have.
Yeah.
Which is great, yeah.
And it's always one of those away games that you know is going to be tough, don't you, just purely because of the atmosphere?
This is it. It's a tough place to go to. Crowd right on top of you.
Yeah.
Same as Anfield, isn't it? Ticks all the same boxes.
Yeah. But did you know they're moving?
Yeah, I did.
That's going to be a crossroads for the club, I guess.
Yeah. And maybe that'll be the catalyst they need to reinvigorate their history.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a shame. I don't get me wrong. I get it from the club's point of view. I get it from the pros outweigh the cons in so many ways.
Yeah.
It's just a shame, isn't it? It's just, you know, well, once upon a time, these clubs were beacons of the town in the middle of it, the heart of the community, and they're now kind of being dragged out of the community now.
Yeah.
It's not what it used to be, is it?
I'm not sure where their new ground's going to be. I've got a feeling it's down by the Mersey, so I don't know if it's one of the old dock areas.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's correct, yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, a club, one of these clubs that, yeah, when you think of Everton, you think of that passionate support, you think of that history, you think of, you know, the successes they've had in the past. And they're one of these clubs that you always feel they're hovering just outside, just waiting for something to happen that will break them into the top six. And they could certainly be a top six club if certain things fell into place.
I mean, they've got the crowd there, haven't they? They've got the fan base there, certainly. I mean, they're a massive club. We can't deny that. They have a sleeping giant vibe.
They do.
And they're sort of flirting with it. In recent seasons, they've got, you know, a couple of players there which seem to be like they're verging on pushing on to the next level again.
But they did, yeah. Under Ancelotti.
And Ancelotti is obviously a fantastic manager, isn't he? He's got pedigree about him.
Yeah, and although who's there now? Because Ancelotti left, I think, in the summer. And I can't think who their manager is now.
Yeah.
We're going to have to resort to a bit of live research here, aren't we?
This is top quality research, isn't it? Benitez. Of course it's
That's
Benitez.
It.
Yeah. Obviously it's Benitez, yeah. Obviously. And again, a manager of a pedigree, obviously.
Yeah.
Especially with what he'd done over at Liverpool.
Yeah.
Which is interesting because we had another sort of riot. A moment this week where a legend has come to a club that almost went to their ultimate rivals, and you know, obviously Ronaldo's turned up at Man United, but it was a moment that we thought he was going for Man City,
yeah,
and how that impacts their legacy and even how the fans receive him. It seems that with Everton, Benitez has been pretty well accepted on the whole. I think the crowd have been behind him.
Yeah, but it's when times get tough, isn't it? How much credit has he got in the bank? That's the key, isn't it?
That's true. And also, I think maybe Everton are on a slightly different feeding pool to Liverpool at the moment.
Yeah.
I think probably Liverpool fans can forgive him for going to Everton because he's not directly competing with Liverpool.
And I suppose he didn't go direct from Liverpool to Everton. He went to Newcastle, didn't he?
Mm.
Yeah, you just think someone of his pedigree in charge, new stadium, with that history and that fan base, all the ingredients are there, aren't they?
Yeah, you know? I agree. So I think they fit into the sleeping giant category. It's just at the moment with Man City and Liverpool doing what they're doing, and obviously Man United, this transfer window flexed their financial muscles.
Mm.
You're thinking to yourself that
it's a hard ceiling to break.
It's a hard ceiling. Yeah. Exactly that. It's just, are they, and obviously Chelsea as well, you know.
Yeah.
You obviously got Lukaku obviously famously ex-Everton, it is a hard season to break, and I can't see them doing it, to be honest.
No, they were, when I was a youngster first getting into football, they were one of the so-called big fives. You know, we have the big five or big six now.
Yeah.
And they're not part of it. They were part of the big five clubs back then, and I think they were part of that little gang that certainly led to change and led to the Premier League being formed. They won the league as recently, well, I say recently, it's a long time ago now, but 1985 was the last time they were champions, so I do remember them as English champions. And then they won it again a couple of seasons later, actually. It's certainly within a lot of people's sort of recent memories that Everton have been champions.
But the 80s were Everton versus Liverpool, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, they pretty much dominated the whole decade, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly.
So, last meetings, we had a rare Premier League away win.
Mm-hmm.
When I say rare, was it the only Premier League away win?
I'm pretty sure it was. We came pretty close to beating Leicester, but drew.
Drew at Bournemouth and Newcastle, didn't we?
We definitely beat Tottenham. I was there. It was glorious. Oh, it was FA Cup, wasn't it?
Yes. The penalties gave it away.
That's the one, yeah. Penalties, yeah. No, but yeah, in terms of actual Premier League away win, that was the last one, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, cult hero scored, didn't they? Dennis?
Dennis Rabeni, yeah.
Rabeni, yeah.
A well-taken goal, actually.
It was, wasn't it?
He could have gone down for a penalty as well. He stayed on his feet. Also, Campbell took his goal very well that game as well. Lovely, kind of confident shot bit in the bottom corner going through and the goalkeeper.
Big goal for Campbell, actually. I mean, he had started the season well, but it's goals like that and games like that that kind of take you to the next level in terms of media profile, isn't it? And
I think so.
Cementing yourself as a Premier League footballer.
Yeah, I mean, that was a different kind of goal to some of the others he'd scored. That was a versus the goalkeeper composed quality strike. It had a lot going for it, that goal. I think that made a lot of people take notice of him, rightfully so. So the story of this game is that I wasn't watching it. I was currently playing a gig in
Hereford. You mentioned this, yeah.
Yeah, on the back of a trailer.
Yeah.
And I remember coming off, and when I got off the trailer, we were 1-0 up. Obviously, so you can tell by the time of day, it was I was headline act. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
We were headlining it on about, no, it was a Christmas festival gig. It was great fun. We were 1-0 up.
Got straight surprised? They were struggling. The toxic atmosphere that were around the club at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the hatred that was coming from the terraces.
Sure, but I still felt that, the fact that it was only away win that season, the fact that, you know, we've gone maybe one or two seasons previous to that without even registering away win.
Yeah.
Just for that fact alone, going away and winning in a Premier League is a genuinely big deal.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of those games. So I was surprised, yes.
It's the second came late, didn't it?
Yeah, that was a typical case that Everton were throwing the kitchen sink at it. But Sereni got in and scored a very good goal. Cult hero, definitely. But he had something about him, actually. I can understand why he didn't get more game time. I mean, Pookie was absolutely peak Pookie at the time, which I'm sure he will be again soon.
But then we had big issues with the strikers in the second half of that season once Pookie got the injury.
Yeah.
Wouldn't he have been worth as an option?
As in the first team. It's a difficult one, isn't it?
I think he left in that January transfer window.
Yeah.
And then obviously we needed a striker for the second half of that.
It'd be interesting.
Remainder of that season.
Yeah, it'd be interesting just to find out why. Whether that was a case that...
Get him on.
Yeah, because obviously Pookie got injured against Leicester, didn't he? First got a toe injury. So it would have been interesting to know whether the club needed him off the books to try and free up some wages to get someone else in, which never materialised.
Yeah.
Or whether the club, you know, the assessment on Pookie's injury was it wasn't as bad as before. Or...
Yeah, exactly. So we could afford to let him go.
Yeah, but I personally felt, and we spoke about this in the previous podcast, Pookie never quite seemed fit after that.
No.
And as a result, never quite hit his straps again that season.
But we had to play him, didn't we? We didn't have
exactly
a Dennis that we could bring on.
Yeah, and I don't know. So Dennis never offered loads to me on the pitch.
Yeah.
But he did actually seem like a very decent finisher.
Yeah. And that's probably what you want, actually, isn't it? Premier League level.
If you're going to score a goal every game, you can afford to be carried by the rest of the team.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, I agree.
And then, obviously, the home game, it's yet another post-lockdown defeat.
Yeah.
Seems to be cropping up every episode, don't they, at the moment? It was quite early, actually. it might have been the second game in, or certainly the second home game.
Pretty sure second home game.
So yeah. There was still hope. I mean, it was still at the point that I was watching. You were a lot more loyal, weren't you?
I watched all of them. I watched twice as much as much as I can. Plus the fact that there wasn't a lot else to do, was it really? It's different for you because you've got kids and things.
Yeah.
Which obviously not an issue for me. So I did watch most of them. All of them, actually. I felt we played okay, but they were better than us, basically.
Yeah.
Is that simple?
I think it was 1-0, and I think a Michael Keane header, wasn't it? Or something?
Yeah, that's right. And it was, you know, I wouldn't say 1-0 thrashing, but it didn't seem like a game we really looked like getting anything out of, did it?
Yeah, true. Now, I talked about Everton have had a few close shaves in recent history, and none more so than the end of the 93-94 season. They had to beat Wimbledon to stay up, and they were 2-0 down, and they beat them 3-2 to, you know, absolute chaotic scenes at the end after that experience that they went through. And, of course, the man on the touchline was our old hero, Mike Walker, wasn't
it? Yeah.
He really defies opinions like no other in Norfolk and Liverpool. So he's obviously idolised here. Completely derided and considered out of his depth by Evertonians. And yeah, he just had an awful time up there. Actually, he had a horrendous start to the following season as well. And he was gone and replaced by Joe Royal. Walker was appointed, I think, on the back of one of our greatest ever top flight performances. We beat Everton 5-1 at Goodison in early 1993. And it's one of those games that it just summed up everything that was good about Walker's Norwich side. And Efnikuku scored 4 goals that day. Do you remember Efnikuku?
Yeah, he was a good striker.
Yeah.
He was.
Need him now, someone like that, don't we?
Yeah, we do. He wasn't, I wouldn't necessarily say lethal in that.
No.
He missed his fair share of chances. But yeah, I mean, yeah, he had a decent career. Do remember that game? Obviously, mainly for that reason.
Yeah.
But yeah, Mike Walker's a funny one. Obviously, he's revered around Norwich for what he did for us.
Do you think I can't remember if I've asked you this or not, previous podcasts probably have, but he came back for a second spell that didn't really work out. Do you think that's a mistake? Or?
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, it's a wonderful thing, but yeah, probably. But isn't it funny how sometimes you get a manager that just works at a certain place, certain time?
Yeah.
Never seems to be able to rekindle that anywhere else. Obviously, Paul Lambert's another one that springs straight to mind. He was brilliant in Norwich. I mean, you'd probably say that, maybe not in terms of pure football, but in terms of excitement, it's as good as we've ever seen. And he never took that anywhere else, really. He never really got it going.
No.
And it's the same with Mike Walker. He came back for fairly mediocre spell at Norwich. It wasn't terrible, wasn't it?
I don't think he ever managed anywhere else after Everton, apart from that second spell at Norwich. I think he had a gap in between. But after Everton, that kind of destroyed his career as a top flight manager. His status was gone by then.
Yeah, so that's it. So he came back. Apparently he came back to Norwich for 96 to 98. So he was there for a little while, second time round.
Yeah.
Then went on to managing Greece.
Okay, fair enough.
So he managed...
It's worst places you could end up, isn't it?
Yeah, but that was the last time he managed. But that was it. So basically that Everton then, followed by a fairly unremarkable return to Norwich, ended his managerial career.
But it was games like that 5-1 win at Goodison that, you know, really, obviously, it's going to raise your profile, isn't it? Raise the whole club's profile.
Yeah.
Funny enough, talking about Lambert, it was a bit like that because we went to Goodison and put 5 past them. And they thought, this manager must be all right. And then, obviously, Lambert put 7 past us with Colchester. And we kind of did the same policy. He also lost on his first return to Carrow Road later that season. And Ian Culverhouse was on the score sheet. So that has been a good little bet, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
In a 3-0 home win.
Yeah.
And Paul Walker, he was sort of ridiculed by both home and away fans, which is a bit of a shame. And then, like I say, he was gone by the following season. I actually went to Goodison the following season. I saw us lose 5-0 in an FA Cup fifth round tie up there. And they went on to win the cup that year. But it's a bit of a sad indictment how far we'd fallen. So, you know, that was a year and a bit after that 5-1. Win.
Yeah, exactly that. That's the problem. And sometimes you get these moves which do neither neither party is any good.
Yeah.
Mike Walker falls very much into that category. At the end of the day, you look back and think, well, no one has actually really come out of this well.
No. Where's Walker divided fans' opinions? One player is loved equally in Norfolk and Merseyside. Central defender Dave Watson.
Yes.
A bit before your time, wasn't it?
From a Norwich point of view, yes. Yeah. But I do remember watching him play for Everton.
Proper defender.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That, obviously, he won the League Cup with us, didn't he?
He did, yeah. He
combo with Steve Bruce.
He lifted the League Cup and the second division title, which it's the equivalent of the Championship these days. He was actually our most capped England player, so he had 6 England caps while he was with us. We talked about that, I think, in the Man City episode.
Yep.
He was a captain at 21 for us, captained Everton, Hall of Fame at both clubs. He lifted the FA Cup with Everton. He won the title also, and it was actually clinched at Carrow Road. So Everton beat us 1-0, goal from defender Pat Fandenhoe. Taking them over the line. Also playing for Everton that day was Mr. Norwich City Football Club, Neil Adams.
Yes.
So a few connections there. A couple of things. Firstly, I might have, again, apologies if we're repeating stuff here, but have you ever seen a club clincher title at Carrow Road? I was trying to think back myself.
It's even rare to see Norwich do it.
Yeah.
Like, we talked about that as well. Like, it's not common that you see Norwich clinch the title at home.
You've never seen a club celebrate on the Carrow Road pitch because they've either won the title or they've stayed up or there's been something that they've had to get a result, and they have.
Yeah, no, basically. No. Not that I can remember. Only Norwich, basically, doing
yeah.
that. It's normally, like I say, Norwich have already clinched it and it happens to be the party last game of the season.
Yeah, exactly. But you're right, actually, it's probably quite unusual for that scenario to crop up.
Well, I don't think, because obviously last season there was no one at Carrow Road, so it wasn't in front of a crowd. I can't think we've actually clinched the title. The previous Championship winning season, we clinched the title actually at Villa away, didn't we?
Yes, but clinch promotion at home against Blackburn.
Yeah, that's true. But I'm also liking in 2003-04, we clinched it by not playing. Oh, no, we lost 1-0 to Sunderland.
That's it. Like, yeah.
And, you know, so actually the clinch promotion, it is actually unusual to do it.
So I guess in, what was that, 1986-87, it wasn't the last game of the season, but it was obviously getting towards the end of the campaign. I think we were mid-table. So it'd probably be quite a nice game to go to, knowing that we're mid-table, so it doesn't really matter too much how the result goes for us. But there's a lot riding on the game for the opposition, which by that default means it's a big game an intriguing game for you to go and watch. And yeah, they won the title at Carrow Road. And yeah, I don't think any Norwich fans would begrudge Dave Watson and his success.
So where do you stand on, if you were at that game, would you be one of the Norwich fans that stays and claps them, or would you...
I would definitely have stayed to watch. I don't know if they would have lifted the title. I imagine not, because the league wouldn't have had the foresight to have the trophy there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I would, yeah. Only because we're safe. I think that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
I think if...
If we'd gone down as a result.
Yeah, or if we were in the Championship running and... Yeah. You know, that kind of knocked us out.
If it kind of fairly neutral involved in it, I would as well.
And it depends on the club as well. But I think I certainly like Everton.
Yeah, there's a few exceptions, isn't there? But I remember, like, obviously seeing the various celebrations at Norwich over the last 10, 15 years. And not necessarily, obviously, we'd usually clinched. It's usually the presentation ceremonies, I suppose, actually clinching it. But there's been a mixture, actually. Some away fans seem to all stay back and enjoy it, and whereas there's other away fans seem to, you know, be totally leg it and don't understand it. It's interesting cultural divide.
Where would you stand then? Would you have been applauding the Everton players that day?
Yeah, I would, personally. Yeah. No problem there. The only time, like I say, the only time I wouldn't is if it adversely affected us.
Yeah.
Or if it was one of a few teams I can't stand. Yeah.
But you'd like to, you know... Just witnessing a team win the title is quite a big deal, isn't it?
Well, it's just what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's those moments, and I've never begrudged that.
Talking about Dave Watson, you mentioned he had a famous partnership with Steve Bruce. You know, you're probably too young to appreciate it, but for me, that's probably our greatest defensive partnership, certainly that I can remember.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I was going to pick your brains or get your opinion on some of the other big ones. So obviously, we got Mulkey and Craig Fleming. That was the other.
Yeah, that's the one that jumps out, isn't it? Yeah, that's the one that springs to mind for me. But in terms of, you're quite right. I don't really remember them playing as Norwich players. It's slightly before my time. But obviously, seeing what Steve Bruce has done, you know, he did for Man United, seeing what Dave Watson did at Everton.
You can imagine those two together, can't you?
Yeah, you can't think that there's too many defensive partners we've had which, out front that one.
Yeah, I agree. And it, like I say, I think Mackay and Fleming's the only one. But, I mean, am I missing any obvious ones here?
Yeah, not really. I don't think so. I'm hoping Handling Gibson will be regarded. Certainly at the Championship level last season, Handling Gibson was good as we've seen. But
yeah,
we're talking about top flight here. And
exactly.
Handling Gibson have had a torrid time so far. So I think it's going to take some beating, those two, definitely.
Yeah. We talked about big occasions when Everton won the title. An even bigger occasion for Norwich's perspective. So 12th of August 1972 was our first ever home top flight game. So it's the opening game of the Division One campaign. So what's that? You know, around about 70 years of history.
Yeah.
I was just trying to imagine what it would be like. I mean, today, can you imagine if that Liverpool game that we opened with was our first ever game in the Premier League or in the top division, how many decibels that would have added to an already cracking atmosphere?
I think so. I think it would have done. And I think it goes back to, we're talking about last podcast with Arsenal away at Brentford. As a big, I know it wasn't Brentford's first ever top flight game.
Yeah.
But effectively, I mean, it was like 50 odd years, wasn't it?
Yeah. So you could say for living memory for a vast majority of that crowd.
Absolutely.
Never seen a top flight game.
Yeah. This is it. So anyone probably under the age of like 60-ish probably, you know, wouldn't remember seeing Brentford in the top flight. And I think that makes a massive difference.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's a few teams last season, like Wickham, for example, you feel sorry for them never experiencing high-level football in front of their fans.
Yeah, we talked about Wickham, didn't we? It's a sort of comparative.
Exactly. So I think it makes a massive deal. And and I'm sure you're going to tell me that our home fans cheered us on to an illustrious victory.
No.
Okay.
They didn't. But it's not that bad. They cheered us on to a 1-1.
Okay, take that.
Not yeah, bad. Jimmy Bone scored the goal. Obviously, our first ever top flight goal, so he's forever got that against his name.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, 67 years I've got in waiting. So it's a long time, isn't it? I guess for that dream.
100%, yeah.
You know, absolutely. I've always found that a bit of an interesting one, trying to picture what that would have been like and that sense of occasion.
It'd be a lot of terracing then as well, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's a hell of an occasion, I can imagine. I bet it's packed.
Yeah, we would have enjoyed it, wouldn't we?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, like I say, it's hard to imagine that buzz. I didn't think we could probably compare it to in our living memory is when we got into Europe and the first time we ever saw a European team play it at Carrow Road. The intrigue and the excitement. But
bizarrely, it's the first one of Vitesse Arnhem, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And I think, weren't you at the home league?
I did go to the home game, yeah.
But it was only like 17,000 there, wasn't there?
There was, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it was full. Yeah, I mean, those were in the days when the Norwich's attendances were pretty low, generally. Mm. Yeah, I went to it, yeah, 3-0. Yeah, really good win, actually. We looked proper good side, like we did back then. Wow. And I went to the Munich home game as well. Something else, obviously, up there in top five all-time games.
Another Jeremy Goss volley, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
A bit from closer range. I remember watching it with Dad at home, that game, fantastic. Yeah, obviously bring it back to Mike Walker and how he got that team to play those wonderful little triangles all over the pitch. We did look a serious team, yeah.
Can you think of a particular game where you've had the most anticipation, the most excitement? I guess probably the playoff.
Yeah, I mean, anticipation is an interesting one. Obviously, massive games you pick out in your mind.
Yeah.
Some which surprisingly, obviously talk about Man City. That's probably the best atmosphere I've ever seen at Norwich.
But you weren't anticipating that before, were you?
Exactly. Probably, I mean, and in terms of anticipation.
And probably, I guess excitement before the game.
Yeah, probably playoffs against Ipswich, probably.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then obviously followed up by the playoff one itself. But I think the fact that we got to play Ipswich in such a massive game for both clubs.
Yeah.
And the fact that we were objectively a much better side, which, you know, weight of quality went on to show, I felt, albeit it's which were down to 10 men. I think that game was like the big one. But also, I think with that comes some sort of sense of like responsibility that actually you could let yourselves down here because you should win those games. I don't know, in terms of anticipation, it's a tough one to judge, really.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because I guess from our perspective, Norwich have had a history of playing these big sides. So, you know, it wasn't like we both witnessed the first time they ever played Liverpool at home or an Arsenal at home.
Probably, I can't think of who the first home game was against when Lambert was on charge of the Premier League. Like the first game of the season was away at Wigan.
Yeah, that's a good point because I guess we'd been so long outside the top flight and it was so unexpected as being there that there was a lot of anticipation and build up to that.
There would have been, yeah, but I can't think it was, but I've got a funny feeling we didn't lose it though.
I think it was Stoke, was it? 1-1 or something. It certainly wasn't a glamorous tie. I was going to talk other notable opening day clashes and we've talked about this, I think, bizarrely in the Rotherham episode and we talked about Ricky Van Wolfswinkel. So we witnessed an opening day goal by him against Everton.
Yeah, this I do remember. I remember Whitaker.
Yeah.
Crossing it in. And for those of you who are not on webcams, we don't have one set up, I'm using the inverted commas kind of for cross there. So I'm pretty sure that was a shot. I don't know what you felt about that. I thought
it wasn't a cross, was it? No. Didn't the ball... He kicked the ball into the ground and it bounced up, didn't it?
I think he got a deflection back to him and he volleyed it. It's one of those ones where he went sort of across the goal and sort of sliced it.
Yeah.
And it fell kindly for Ricky, who...
Good header, though, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
Anticipated.
Very good. It was well timed, but it wasn't a sort of traditional cross. It was quite loopy, wasn't it? It was fast, hard and loopy and spinning.
Yeah.
And he finished it with an aplomb, I think is the phrase.
Yeah.
For the yeah, and you felt to yourself then, well, this is it. Monkey off the back.
Time. Did Johnny Hayson score that game as well?
Yeah, no, that you're quite right. He scored that, I think...
Ross Barkley scored
Ross
for them,
Barkley
I remember.
Scored, yeah, I think it was his first Everton goal.
Yeah.
Certainly. I do remember that, yeah, and it was 2-2. I can't remember who scored the other goal.
I mean, they looked good, didn't they? Mm. I remember thinking they came into that game on a successful season before, and they looked a they did look a good side.
And Ross Barkley particularly looked good actually, that game. He hasn't quite kicked on, has he?
Nah.
But yeah, that's right. And I remember coming off that game thinking, well, you know, that's great. Got that monkey off his back out. Because we put a lot of pressure on Ricky Van Wolfswinkel, didn't we? He had like all the advertising slogan about, you know, he's afraid of the wolf and that sort of thing. And it was like a little pressure to put on a young lad who was big money signing for us. But I do remember watching him being interviewed afterwards and he thought he had a swagger and a confidence about him. I was like,
yeah.
You know what, I like this lad. He's going to go and do well for us.
Yeah.
So another one of my famous predictions there.
But yeah, I mean, that was another big opening game against Everton. A couple of his sort of final thoughts, really. There was didn't Bessong score up there?
Yeah.
To get a draw, and Grant Holt scored there.
So Bessong scored under Hughton, didn't he? And that was in that period when we went... on like about a 12 or 13 that's game it,
yeah.
run.
I think we drew up at Everton, didn't
we? Yeah, we did. Grant Holt from a very acute angle.
Yeah.
Like when in that first season of Premier League where he was just on fire and should have gone to the Euros.
I think they watched that game in a bar in Thailand.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, which springs to mind.
And we also won. Ki Kamara scored ahead, didn't he? Ki Kamara, who came on loan from America, didn't he?
Right.
And there was a lot of kind of interest about him. Because he's a real kind of full of life, full of energy kind of character on Twitter.
Yeah.
And he came in. That was the only goal he scored for us, though, I think. I'm pretty sure it was.
So, I remember when we went down under Worthington in 04, 05, we raced into a 2-0 lead against them at Cow Road. And they beat us 3-2 that day. And it was another sort of blow, really, to the confidence. Darren Beckford, do you remember him?
Yeah, Darren Beckford,
He was a big money signing that failed to deliver. He actually scored a hat-trick against them in a 4-3 win in 1992.
Okay.
And then, obviously, we got a win in the League Cup under Daniel Farke, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. Yep.
Yeah. Was that?
I think it was a Murphy.
That's what I was thinking.
Murphy Thunderbolt.
Yeah. So it's been quite a few games against them and, yeah, certainly a few memorable ones.
I mean, when you think about it, it kind of gives you a bit of confidence, doesn't it? This must be at home, shall we?
Yeah, we're going back down this route again. We've actually got a week off, Al. We've got a well-earned break because there's Watford in between.
Right.
But obviously, we did Watford last year, so there's no episode for Watford.
And international break as well.
Exactly. There's actually Watford after Arsenal and then Everton. So on that basis, it could well be Everton away because Arsenal's away, Watford will be at home.
Sorry. Yeah. You've got right.
It's not as relentless as the Championship, is it, this podcast and in the Premier League?
No, it's not. Yeah. Particularly last year.
Put your feet up, can't we?
Yeah, when we try to squeeze more podcasts into a small amount of time. So we've got like a few weeks break now. So that's fine. Yeah. Everton away.
It makes the predictions a bit harder, doesn't it? So we're now looking, obviously, a lot further into the future.
Well, the issue we've got, so we're recording this just after the Leicester game, which neither of us saw because of commitments. We still don't quite know what our final team's going to be. It's hard to predict, isn't it? The problem is I keep predicting defeats, okay? So
yeah.
I'm going to go...
And we've had three defeats, so you've been correct to predict defeats, haven't you?
13 defeats on the bounce on Norwich and Denver Parker, apparently, or they spread over two seasons. I'm going to go 1-0 Norwich.
Okay.
Oh, that's brave, isn't it? I'm going to stick with it, 1-0 Norwich.
Yeah, that is pretty brave. And that's... On the basis it's at Goodison as well.
Yeah. I'm wondering the way we've been to Norwich. Yeah, that's silly. But I'm going to stick with it. That's fine.
Yeah, it's a bit silly, isn't it? I don't know. I think what happens against Watford hinges, really. Come out of Watford with a win and, we could get someone up there. But no, I'm going to go a solid 2-0 defeat. But
I think, your head is ruling your heart.
Yeah.
In contrast to me.
Yeah, so that's Everton covered. Thank you very much again, Phil, for your time.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed it.
And I'm very pleased that we're in the European places currently. Or we're in the relegation zone, so depending how it's going at this time.
That's it. Yeah, who knows? Probably the latter.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Okay, cheers, Phil.
Cheers, mate.
Thank you, mate. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.